Okay.
Welcome to the Permaculture Pimp Cast with your host, the Permaculture Pimp Daddy and the Pasture Raised Pimp. Get your recommended daily allowance of permaculture, preparedness, and practical living. Tip a pimp. Stay alert, stay alive. Permaculture is my passion. Oh yeah, welcome to the bonus episode of the Permaculture Pimp Cast, where pimp stands for permaculture is my passion. The only pimp cast on planet Earth where we discuss permaculture, preparedness, practical living, and lately a whole variety of other topics. So yeah, this is going to be that bonus episode, and I'm really excited about it, folks. You're going to be glad you tuned in. But as always, this episode brought to you by twooldcrowshomestead.com. Turn that simp into a pimp. Bam! Also, Heaven's Harvest, y'all, 10% off with promo code PERMA. Do all your preparedness on your own and all the things you can't buy, or if you need any, you need any seeds, you need anything that you can't source, go check them out. You're going to be glad you did. Remember, 10% off with promo code PERMA. And if you'd like to tip a pimp, go check us out on the Fountain app where you can leave comments and you can drop some sats. That's basically a derivation of a Bitcoin, as I understand it. So drop some SATs on some PIMPs over here at Permaculture Pimpcast. EMP Shield, always, yeah, you got to check them out. Your number one problem is not necessarily an EMP in the typical world. It's going to be lightning, and they guarantee it up to 25 Gs. So go check them out. You want to get your house protected with all that. Remember, $50 off with promo code PERMA. And let's not forget Harvest Right. We'll have a link for all that down below. Be sure, if you're going to get one, use our link because it helps us out a great deal. Now, this is going to be one of those bonus episodes, y'all, and I'm going to be doing a lot of them coming up because there are people out there that are doing extraordinary things that you really ought to know about. Some of these folks live near to me. Some folks don't live so close. And these just happen to be some of the folks that live close to me, or at least one of them in particular. Now, they have a place that's near me. I've talked about them on the YouTube channel, and they are doing things that you might want to check out. They have things that you're not going to find at a typical nursery. And it's a mom and pop operation, and they do extraordinary stuff. Now, we're going to go ahead and bring on our guest right now, Ian Holt. He's become a buddy of mine, and he lives down the road. How you doing, Ian?
Pretty good. How are you?
I'm good. As always, man, there's a superhero story behind everybody, and you're one of those heroes out there. Why don't you give everybody a little bit of background on you before we jump into it?
Oh, yeah. Well, we got here like 2018, sort of right before all the craziness with the housing market around here, and had pretty big background in working on organic farms, and went, read every permaculture book there was maybe 10-15 years ago that I could get my hands on before it was kind of like mainstream as much as it is now, but it was always like trying to take it and make it more concrete. I've seen a lot of like permaculture people kind of, got everything going on. And sometimes I fall into that category too, but trying to, focus more on like production ag was a big focus of mine. So then when we were in Asheville, came about and just looking for some land, and we got where we are now, and Farm Connection, we started up in 2020. And it's been like a big learning curve, because even if you read everything, study all you want, operating a nursery business is just a whole nother level. So just always trying to like learn more and appreciate like content you put out there and people you bring on. And yeah, that's just what I try to strive for, is just always like doing better every year.
Let's back up a little bit. This along with your wife, Allison, and both of you have, a background that's pretty varied, and you got a lot of different skills that you bring to the table. So what made you and Allison decide, hey, we're going to buy this? As I understand it, you bought that business and you've turned it into what it is right now. What gave you that, that impetus to make that move?
I think a big part of it was, you know, a lot of the, I mean, it was really just like the opportunity presented itself, and it was, you know, you might only get one chance to really go for it. We were looking for a lot of properties that would be more like homestead scale, 2-5 acres. And it just always seemed like, down the road, a couple of years, want to get more land. And a big part was always like, how can you support yourself from where you're at? And so when this presented itself, we weren't really looking for it. And we just sort of kind of jumped in head first and just like had faith we could make it work. And, you know, it's just been a whole process from there.
Folks, there's a lot of reasons I want Ian on here. We'll get into those in a minute, but there's a number of you out there that are currently locked into a 9-to-5 that you hate. You do enough to keep from getting fired, and they pay you enough to keep you from quitting. And the extraordinary thing that they did was basically buy this business, as I understand it, and you turned it around, and it's growing. You've been voted the best in Asheville, even though you're not even in Asheville. And the growth I've seen in just the time that I've known y'all has been extraordinary. I mean, you started off with a certain thing, then you expanded even more. You carry a line of products that you can't find anywhere else around here. And better still, you've started adding other elements to what you're currently doing. Now, so folks, if you're thinking about how do I get out of this rat race, how do I do it? Well, you're talking to one of the people that has actually done it. You're actually talking to two people, or you're listening to two people that have actually done it. He's going about it one way, and I'm going about it another way. Ian, when you got in there, you know, you basically have an infrastructure of a place. You've expanded. Now, as I understand it, you guys also live on this property as well with your children. How do you make that work? I mean, how do you separate? Because, well, why don't you first describe what you have there at the Farm Connection, which, by the way, is the name of the place, y'all. And as I understand it, you guys live behind it, and you have a little bit of acreage back there, and you run your homestead and the nursery with a storefront that faces a pretty decently busy road. I mean, how did you make all that work? What was there when you first arrived, and how did you adjust that to make it to what it is today? I mean, was it basically a shell of a place, and you added value to it? How did that work?
Yeah. So when we bought the place, the lady, she ran a nursery, just kind of like typical proven winners and buying in things to resell and flowers. And she would only be open like March to May. And then I think her husband ran, you know, like a dump truck business. And I don't think she was, I mean, it's kind of hard to find a lot of accurate records because sometimes people don't keep accurate records for one reason or another. But yeah, when we bought it, there was basically nothing there except for the greenhouses, the store, which was like really good. You know, everything was there. We just had to make it work. And so, yeah, our first year, it was pretty challenging trying to like balance out. Allison was still working at the time. And so we were just trying to gradually, you know, see how we could, you know, start it going. Originally, we did have a partner who had like a small nursery, and, you know, life happens and business partnerships are challenging. But originally we were wanting somebody that was kind of already experienced in the area to come in so we could, you know, have like some inventory. So that worked for a little bit, but you know, there's a lot of other things happen in his life, and so that changed. And yeah, it's always like pretty challenging to keep the balance going, I would say, because our life is sort of public. Our kids are with us all the time, and yeah, the homestead aspect of it, oftentimes like I focus a little bit more on that, and it sort of gets put on the back burner some more than maybe we would like. But, you know, the focus has been more on the business, just trying to, you know, put that into more. And so every year we've sort of tried to take like a stronger leap of faith in terms of, you know, not necessarily having as many side jobs. But that's the main way we've made it work, is just put in time as we can and the business, and, you know, keep a side job going to pay all the bills. And then, you know, we're hoping this year and next year we can really finally just, you know, focus solely on that, because it's pretty hard to kind of be, you know, have your foot in like 5 different things at once and definitely on the homestead, I'm sort of guilty of taking on too many projects. And so I'm trying to do better at like honing in at what is really the best things to focus on.
Man, that's really what kills a whole lot of homesteads is too many people do too many things all at once. And then some of us, like yourself and myself, we say, okay, well, this is entirely too much. Let me scale back a little bit and just kind of laser beam on the things that really, really matter. But I noticed also, in addition to having the, in addition to having what you currently have going on, which is a homestead and a nursery business out front, you've started adding additional things to the nursery to add value to what you currently have. Now, what does that look like? I mean, you guys have started a series of classes as of late.
Yeah, I'm trying to, a big part is like, as I said, the woman before, she would just close down in June because, you know, nurseries, they'd kind of drop off sometime mid-June, July, but that's really when the produce comes on. And it's pretty hard to make it work in the summer in a lot of ways. So trying to add value to the community mainly. And that was originally like part of our vision, why we like chose the Farm Connection name, is connect like people with farms and not just be like just like another nursery. But our first year open was 2020, so then people didn't really want to get together, and that sort of put it on the side burner. So it's always been something we wanted to do, just like timing with people and social gatherings didn't quite work. So this year was really the first time we've put it on, and had a lot of good results from it. And you know, there's a lot of really skilled, knowledgeable people in our area, and so the more we can, you know, just like bring them in and introduce them to other people, because sometimes, you know, people live in Marshall, quote unquote, but they might be 30, 45 minutes from us. So the more we can just like gather into our spot, then, you know, we don't necessarily have the knowledge, but we might know somebody that can share their knowledge. And I think that's what really builds like a strong community, is just realizing like all the skills that, you know, people you never knew even had, and getting them like a platform to share it on.
So do you see, partially from what I'm hearing, it sounds like we kind of, to a certain extent, have the same kind of business model, where you see making money as a byproduct of just doing good work. Is that accurate?
Well, I think like ideal is you are adding value to, you know, economies have different sort of perspectives, but yeah, I think, you know, we could be a nursery and offer certain things and sell more of those, but you know, they might be invasive plants or not native that don't really like add value in other ways. So yeah, we try to sacrifice like a little bit on maybe just focusing on, you know, making as much money as possible with trying to do like community oriented things. We try to do donations, school gardens, and community, like people that maybe can't necessarily afford to spend, you know, a few hundred dollars on some fruit trees. We have some programs, try to put a fund aside to then, you know, have it possible for them, and really trying to just have it where people get value from us that we can offer something to the community, even if, you know, it's not necessarily like an economic source, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I totally relate to that. I mean, we try to help out people that sometimes just don't have the resources, and I totally get that, but you also got to make a living. You got to put bread on the table. You got to get things done. So with this series of courses you have, I mean, that's something that just happened right out of the gate. So that's adding value to your business. So what do those courses look like? What have you done so far, and what do you have coming up?
I think we're mainly done for the year. As I know, we did have like a cob workshop that was scheduled, but I think for, you know, we had a spoon carving thing. The person broke their hand, I think, so I don't think they're teaching. And the other cob one also got canceled. But all the workshops that we did put on, they really had like positive feedback. We did like a fruit tree planting thing. We had Greg Peterson, I think is his name, came in and kind of showed, because, you know, there's 20 different ways people have to plant trees, real basic stuff, but it's always good to get different perspectives on that. We had a friend of ours, Brett, he showed just how to build a a basic structure. So we got that put up. I think a lot of people really valued that. Just yesterday, we did like a basic poultry processing where they brought out a mobile unit and full hands-on with the scalder and plucker. And, you know, it's also like a community resource that we've like connected people with, because oftentimes, you know, if you do half a dozen birds by hand on your own, it takes a lot more time, I think, than people sometimes realize. So I think the more you can pool people together and then utilize another resource you have that people didn't even know existed, get, you know, everybody to pool in and get things processed. I'm trying to think of the one of the other. Yeah, we did like a basic tool sharpening workshop. You know, a lot of things are really pretty simple, but a lot of people seem to be like an uncharted territory and really necessary skills just to have honed down, like, you know, how to sharpen tools properly is not something I was ever taught as a kid. And so I think, yeah, we've had really good feedback from all the things we put on. And a lot of it is just like, what do people have in our area that they can teach people? And like, what do people really need? That's sort of like common knowledge, but, you know, there's a whole gap with a lot of people didn't grow up on farms that, you know, it's sort of basic stuff. People, if you grew up on a farm, but if you live in your city all your life, you might not know how to sharpen a chainsaw. So,
yeah, those are skills, I think. And I was glad you guys put that on, because those are things that most people really don't spend a whole lot of time thinking about. When they buy a homestead, they get on a homestead, they think about, okay, the animals, the plants, and all these other things. And I was so pleased to see that you guys put that on, because it's one of those fundamental things that, okay, so you got an axe, but if you don't know how to sharpen it, then it's no good. It's like, you got a knife, but you can't sharpen it. So what good is that? I'm glad you did that, because that's one of those fundamental skills that kind of gets lost in the, I'll call it a toolbox of all the things you need to get a homestead off and running. You know, the guy, as I understand it, was even showing how to sharpen lawnmower blades and things like that. Things that most people just really don't spend a whole lot of time thinking about, or adding that to the collection of skills that you need when you start a homestead. So, yeah, folks, you definitely want to check them out. Now, Ian, through the winter, now there's a lot of other people out there. I know, because I read the emails all the time, and there's so many people out there looking, I mean, all throughout this country, all throughout the planet, and they're looking for ways out of the rat race. They want to go out, wake up in the morning, go do what it is they love, and they want to find a way to monetize that. So I want to stick back to that a little bit. Naturally, when you have a nursery, the fundamental question everybody's going to ask, or at least a lot of people ask, is how do you do it through the winter? I mean, how do you bring in revenue? I mean, what does that look like for all the people out there that are farm wide that are thinking about how I guarantee there's a number of people thinking, okay, I might want to give this a shot. Seems like a low barrier to entry, but how do I possibly do this through the winter? Is that something you'd be willing to share as far as how you go about doing that? Or is that some proprietary, we're going to keep it to ourselves kind of information?
Yeah, no. So every year is like a little different. We're trying to get more into being able to ship plants and, you know, fall garlic. Big thing is, you know, from now until spring is really when people need to be putting a lot of perennials in the ground. So there is like a big market for especially some of the rare things we have to get them to people that can't find them in their area. So we've been trying to, you know, get into that space, but that takes time. So as we need, like sometimes even how it is now, like getting pretty successful, but every now and then through the winter might take a few side jobs here, do a little side hustle here just to get a few hundred bucks here, a few hundred there, make it through. We've also, you know, sort of relied on bank credit to get it through previously, especially just like the amount of orders that we put in starting in the summer all the way through winter, and our revenue goes down a lot. So we wouldn't have to do that, but we're really trying to like expand and do better, have more things to offer, improve infrastructure, offer more. But a big thing I would say on that for like the average person is, you know, a lot of people grow up on farms or have like big farms in Wisconsin. And like the reality is some of them still got to go grind their job. you know, not always 9 to 5, but some sort of regular thing to pay for extra. And I think a big part is like the quality of life you get with, you know, having your homestead and farm. And yeah, it can be a little like discouraging sometimes if, you know, you're wanting to go head on and have, you know, whatever it is, you really think is going to work out to pay for everything, but you know, everything's more expensive now. And there's just like a lot of barriers for that. So I really try to tell people that the biggest thing, like hits home for me would be, you know, the fruit of your labor is really like enjoying it. So the more you can find something that you enjoy, even if it's, you know, I prefer to not think of everything as a 9-to-5 grind. You know, you can have a off-farm job that you're still sort of doing on your own, doing some side gigs, teaching, offering a lot of skills that maybe hopefully you enjoy, but it's a way to add value and bring some money back to your farm. And the more you can do that, I think it makes it a lot more doable to not have it be just like overwhelming. Because if, you know, you're going to do something with your day, so you can do something you don't enjoy and get paid for it, or you can choose something that you like to do. And I think that's a big thing that I've noticed with people, where there's a lot of people that they could have another job that may not pay so well, but they would really enjoy. Most people choose the better paying job, but a lot of people don't really like that. And then, you know, they're also trying to do whatever their sort of hobby is and make it all work. And I try to keep it more simple, where just do what you enjoy, and then it'll, you know, you'll get better at it, and people will see, you know, that come through in you, and your ability to just offer that value to people becomes, you know, much better over time, if that makes sense.
Tell me, how do you manage this? Folks, if you ever go by there, it's the Farm Connection in Marshall, North Carolina. Every time I go by there, it's always a joy because I see the kids playing. It's always a fun atmosphere because I see kids out there doing what kids do. But a number of people are going to say, well, shoot, I'd really like to get in this space, but how on earth do I manage this and raise my family at the same time? Because you guys are doing it, and it's really astonishing, folks, if you ever go there, because they have an infant, and they basically got the infant the whole time while they're working, and you got a bunch of other kids that are running around, and then you homeschool on top of it, right?
Yeah, I mean, I would more say it's like the John Holt unschooling philosophy of it. So the idea is that, you know, the idea that you have to teach children is kind of a wrong thought in and of itself. Children are always learning. It's just a matter of what they're learning. So as long as, you know, you pay attention to them, and when they have an interest, whether it's math or tools or motors or reading, writing, any of that, and you just give them like all the tools that that you can find to just let them run with it, they really will amaze you in what they're able to, not necessarily teach themselves, but you know, it's much harder to sit somebody down and say, this is what I'm going to teach you, and this is what you're going to learn, then, well, what are you interested in learning? And eventually, you know, you do have to cover everything, but it's just like a different time scale. Cause there's a lot of children that have different, you know, developmental phases, where some children, when they're 5, they're really active and all they want to do is run around and play all the time. And some kids, you know, want to sit on the couch and look at a book. So over time, like, it all starts to even out a little bit more, but the more you can, you know, give children the tools to learn what they want, then it's not such a chore. And, you know, it's allows it to be just sort of unhindered learning, which is like more like stress free for them, which I think for people is the same way. You know, the more you can really dive in and focus on what you want to learn that you really enjoy, it's like not so hard, where if you got to grind and, you know, learn something you don't really want to, it's seems a bit more exhausting.
Well, how do you manage that though? Because a number of people are going to say, hold on, let me get this right. How are they able to operate a homestead, operate a business, and look after the kids and do everything? How do you manage that? What does that look like? And is it a struggle? Because most people are going to think, oh shoot, if I got the kids there with me, in the United States of amnesia, most of us are going to think, oh, we got to put them on the school bus, go have them off to get indoctrinated somewhere, and then I could get some work done. How do you do that? How do you and Allison manage doing all you're doing and, you know, managing the kids at the same time? Is that a struggle, or is it because of your developmental model that you have there with the unschooling that makes it possible? Is that a frustration? Is it tough, or some days easier than others? What does that look like?
Some days are easier than others. Definitely, you know, there's certain times with children where, you know, it's just, they need to go to the park. They need to have some friends, get away from what they're used to all the time. So that's big thing is, you know, sometimes there's a lot of stuff at the business that really needs to get done, but like children come first and just have to, you know, not necessarily get everything done that we want to do, have priorities and set. So sometimes it's, you know, there's some things around our business that maybe don't look quite as like put together as we would like, but a lot of that is kind of related to that, like work-life balance. And then there's a lot of things that, you know, even children, you know, 4 or 5, they really want to help, and, you know, they kind of want to be like dad or be like mom and do what they're doing. So oftentimes that's how we are able to manage is, you know, something simple like put some dirt in some trays. And even if it's not necessarily 100% the best way to do it, make a big mess, like they're really contributing. And then over time, like it does go, oh, wow, you know, like Marcel was able to, he's our oldest son, and he's able to, you know, fill some trays, and he really helps. And that's really like the reality of all the old farms, you know, part of why they had whole bunch of kids is it's sort of like a family endeavor. And, you know, there's definitely struggles. I would be lying if I said there wasn't, but it's always just trying to keep it in balance. And I think a big part is oftentimes, like if you grow up on a farm, there's a lot of things you might take for granted until you move back to the city. And then you go, oh, wow, I didn't realize like quite how good it was. I thought my life was so hard then, and then the city thing. So I think that's part of what over time with the children, you know, the grass is sort of always greener on the other side doing something else. But then once you get exposed to that more, it's like, oh, traffic in the city and all the different things go on with that. So yeah, it's definitely a struggle. I would just say, you know, with you gotta get something done, and like the kids are sort of going off, you know, it's becomes real hard where if you just sit down and really try to, you know, put aside like the project, it can really wait, you know. But putting the focus on the kids and really being in there with them is, I think, where it has the most benefit long term, where a lot of times it's easy for parents just kind of like sit them down in front of a computer and put on cartoons or whatever else and check out. But, you know, they really need that like one-on-one trust building, even if it's just, you know, sometimes just like a few minutes, like some me time, you know, for them.
Okay, speaking of me time, there's going to be a number of people out there that are also considering this lifestyle, and they're thinking, now don't answer this if it's a bridge too far, because some people are going to think, oh shoot, I love my spouse, but man, can I work with them all day? Or are we going to be at each other's throats? You know, as a person that has, you know, basically my whole family working on what we do, we have methods, and maybe I should discuss that in the future about how we go about doing that. But we bump heads every once in a while, and it becomes something of a, if you're not careful, it can be struggle. It can be a real struggle. How do you deal with that? Or is that even a problem where you are?
Yeah, it's challenging for sure. Some days are worse than others. I think a lot of times it's related to just how having, you know, family life is, where, you know, when before you have a family, if you need some time by yourself, you can go off for 4 hours, do whatever you need to do, have your alone time. Once you're married, have children, it's all like one big, you know, you're like together is the way I think of it. And so the more you can, you know, just set aside time for yourself, with the other person, but it has to be like both people need that. And so for me, what I've noticed is a lot of times, especially if you're working all the time, but not necessarily running as an example, then really like your cortisol level is just building, 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 building. And that doesn't drop the next day just because you take a day off or go to the river or any of that. If you don't do either, you know, a lot of people might drink too much or smoke or do something else to get like that cortisol dump. So for me, like I notice it with myself where when I start getting real, you know, I need to just go run or go do like a, I do, you know, jiu-jitsu class sometimes or teach a, you know, wrestling class, things like that, just for, you know, for 1 hour, get my heart rate up to, you know, 90% of max, dump that cortisol, then a lot of that other stuff I notice like tends to take care of itself better. So I think a lot of times it comes back to just sort of a relationship in general, that it just gets any of those problems when you work a business with your partner, then, you know, you just notice all those more where, you know, if you have your own relationship problems and somebody goes to work and somebody else comes, you're only together for a couple hours, it kind of doesn't build. But when you're around each other 12 hours a day, all the time, like every little thing builds on itself. So that's what I've noticed is a lot of it just like taking care of yourself. But that also has to be both people doing that. You know, if just I take care of myself, then that creates resentment and, you know, not good for my wife. And same thing, if she goes out all the time and I'm dealing with all the kids and the business and getting too stressed. So a lot of it's just like setting aside, you know, 2 days a week seems pretty good for each of us. And then I think everything gets along a lot better. But for me, it always goes back to just your health and like your well-being, just like as a person. And that if that's not taken care of and you try to take on something that's just going to test you more, then it's just going to expose all the problems you hadn't really dealt with on your own.
I'm going to ask you a question, Ian, that's I would have never asked a decade ago. And I'm going to ask because I think you encountered it also. Now, folks, just so you kind of get a picture of this, you have the Farm Connection, which is their business, and it's alongside a busy road. You're going to have people in and out. You have your children out there. You also have, in today's day and age, you got a number of people out there. Now, folks, if you know Ian, if you just look at the man, if you're in his presence, you're going to be thinking, okay, I'm going to pick somebody else I want to screw with. You know, the guys, you look at him and he's definitely got testosterone, so nobody's ever going to challenge you. But as of late, there have been these incidents, and the second I brought it up, I don't know how much you want to get into this or not, but there's been a number of people that have had, oh, how do I put it, some oddities in terms of people coming around approaching their children. And how do you deal with that element where you're raising kids literally right there? You got people that may be absolute strangers rolling up on there. How do you deal with things in terms of security when you have your whole family present and accounted for? That, like I said, this is a question I wouldn't have even asked 10 years ago, but I know that it's got to be a concern for you. Why don't you talk about that for a minute?
Yeah, so it was not something I really thought about too much until I had, you know, incident. I guess it was in May, maybe it was April. But let's see, I guess as a parent, you know, I can remember my dad going sort of a little extra cautious, like you got to watch out for this and this. And, you know, some people are a little bit more aware of the sick people in the world, I guess the best way to put it. And it's not something you really want to think about regularly. But the reality is, I guess, you know, some people are just sort of twisted in a spiritual sense, is how I think of it. So yeah, it's definitely something where in a lot of ways, like I feel safer being with my kids than if I, you know, have them go off to wherever, then I feel like they're a little bit more vulnerable than being around me. But they're still, I think a lot of it is just teaching kids the truth. You know, kids know when you're lying anyways, just because they're really intuitive. And it's not like you got to go into all the details, but just, hey, you know, there's some people in the world that, like, if you get a funny feeling and something doesn't seem right, like, just go the other way. Don't engage with them. They try to call you over, any of that. And yeah, we did have a pretty weird incident where I wasn't even really aware that it happened at the time until I sort of put two and two together a bit more, because I'm pretty trusting of people for the most part, try to see the good in people, even, you know, we all got bad things about ourselves. But yeah, we had some people roll up our driveway, actually, and yeah, they were looking for some chickens. They'd loved our beautiful chickens, was the story. And you know, they had actually tried to, like, call my boys over to the car, which I didn't realize right when, you know, I realized this after they left. And yeah, my boys, they just, like, went and got me, because they don't know this person, to pull up in the driveway, come and get me rather than go engage with them on their own. And yeah, I think if I were to be really honest about it, it's more of like a spiritual thing for me. So I'm a big believer in just, like, prayer and having protection in that way. Like, there's Psalm 91 is a great one, and a lot of that, I think, goes a long way. And just, like, having faith that you will have, like, protection in that sense, or at least, like, awareness, inclination if something is sort of amiss. And yeah, otherwise, you know, I used to open carry a lot and quit doing that because I reached a point in my life I didn't ever want to go there with somebody. I thought, well, if I'm going to open carry, I better be ready to, you know, take somebody's life if the circumstance comes to it. And I just never really saw a reason I would want to do that. And so I was reminded of that when somebody came up, and, you know, that's probably the only thing I would go to jail for the rest of my life for, is keep my kids safe and all. And I don't think it's necessarily that I always have to open carry in that sense, but it's sort of that mindset that, you know, I think most parents would, you know, die or do whatever they could to keep their children safe. So I think a lot of times just, like, having a little bit of that mindset, you know, not gonna just allow people to do whatever they want. There's usually like a predator mindset with people like that, where they're kind of looking for prey, not necessarily, like, coming into, you know, lion's den or whatever analogy you want to put. So I think the more that there's that presence, goes a long way. But yeah, for me, it's just like a spiritual thing. So putting prayer around it, you know, hedge of protection, things like that, I think go a long way, and just having faith about it.
Yeah, I'm all about that. I remember when you first told me about what happened with you, crazy, where, you know how you hear, like, you hear a story from somebody, you just kind of bank it in your head a little bit, and then later on you hear something else, and then you're like, oh, okay, well, that's twice now I've heard similar stories like that. And then all of a sudden I made a video about it, talking about, hey, folks, watch out for your kids. There's these, and I had actually come across a couple of areas down at the Ingalls in Mars Hill, which is near both of us. And I'm like, hold on, man, there's too many. There's three distinct things that just unfolded like this. And I got to tell people to look out for their kids. And, you know, this is, like I said, it's one of those things, folks. If you have a business out there and you have your family exposed to it, just be really, really mindful. Like Ian said, Psalm 91, you know, he that dwelleth in the secret place of the Most High shall abide under the shadow of the Almighty. It's one of my favorite Psalms, and there's a reason for it too. So I would strongly consider everybody out there to consider what that is, and pray over your house, over your family, over your kids. I know this goes without saying in most cases, whereas when I was a kid and somebody tried to snatch me and my little brother up, I was going to say it was rare, but it actually happened twice, that sort of thing. These days, you're having people perhaps on your property that you don't know a whole lot about. Spiritually, they may be as crazy as a three-headed cat. You don't know about that, but all of us are trying to find ways to monetize things on our homesteads. And sadly, one of the things that we have to consider is the security of our family. And I don't know if I've ever talked about it. There were two incidences back in Texas where Michelle was, had she not been paying attention, leaving a Walmart of all places, she would have likely been bopped over the head, and who knows what happens then, you know? So, folks, you got to be, you got to stay alert, stay alive all the way around these days. And yeah, so that's definitely something that I had to absolutely cover. So, Ian, before we, I'm gonna kind of get into another matter based on what you're wearing there. We'll cover that in a second. But if anybody wants to come check out the Farm Connection, can they get a hold of you? Can they order things online? Do they have to go in person? What does that look like?
Yeah, we're open here in Marshall. I think we're still open 7 days a week because we've been doing the workshop some on Sunday. And when it's 85 out and sunny, we got to come down and water anyways. The website is, I think, the farmconnectionmadco.com, or you can look us up on Facebook, the Farm Connection, and we should have some availability pretty soon for fall trees and shipping of that nature. We do have garlic, I think, is set up on the website currently. So as the weather cools off, it's still been pretty hot and dry here, so not missing anything by not having it in the ground yet. Should have a I think we have like six or seven varieties on there for, yeah, that's open for shipping. We've had some orders come in. And yeah, if anybody ever, you know, has any questions, wants to reach out, it's a big thing. We try to not necessarily monetize everything is, you know, I think a big part is just like building community, helping people, especially when it comes to, you know, growing and things of, you know, if you want suggestions, how to do garlic, like, whatever it is, you know, how to plant things, you know, we're always there to just try to give people 2 cents, help them out.
All right. This is where, folks, we'll link all their information down below. This is where this is going to get a little bit off the rails. And I don't know where it's going to go at this point, but if you're not watching, if you're listening, I know most people listen. And by the way, y'all, we do have a YouTube channel for the podcast. It's the Permaculture Pimpcast. So go over there, subscribe. Maybe we can start doing some of these programs live, because we basically are doing it live anyway. We just can't do it yet on YouTube. So get over there, subscribe, and we can start simulcasting these things. So where you could have the option to listen in a podcast form, or you can check it out on YouTube, but also we could, in real time, because I'd like to turn this into something of a live show, in real time we could be able to address the questions, which you're probably going to wish you had some right now. Ian, I can't help but notice, if you're not watching, folks, go to the YouTube. You'll see when it finally gets up there. I see you got a shirt on, and it says something. I didn't expect this.
There we go. That's
it. Okay, so it says, Flat Earth, NASA lies. So we're going to basically feed all of these people that tune into this Pimpcast right now, for the people that tune in for the esoteric whenever we talk about it, and the people that tune in for the farm news. Yeah, who ever heard of a farm-based paranormal podcast? I don't know, but we're the first. Ian, I got to ask you, so why don't you talk to me about that shirt? If you want to talk about it, I'm not, I imagine you want to, because you wore it on this podcast. So let's get into this. I don't have a position on this. I haven't examined it. Not in any great detail. So why don't you tell me where you stand on this sort of thing?
Oh, it's, I mean, it's sort of like a, you know, trying to think with the shirt itself, it definitely like creates some sort of reaction, engaging people, not to like drive them out or nothing, but, you know, it's a little bit more extreme than maybe how I personally view things. I guess. Yeah, I guess the best way is just like go deep dive in. And yeah, I was sitting on the lawn one day with my, you know, my brother and my wife. This was quite a while ago, and we were eating Sunday brunch, and my brother had mentioned it to me as like this thing a friend mentioned, and you know, I thought it was batshit crazy whole idea. It's like the thing that everybody knows since you're, you know, 4 years old. And so I just ended up looking into it a little bit and sort of deep diving for weeks. And I guess the Cliff Note version would be for anybody that would consider themselves a believer in the Bible, Christian. You know, it's sort of like this old thing that gets made fun of, really, about fundamentalist Christians. Oh, they still think, you know, the Earth center of the universe and all, but if you read your Bible, that's actually what it says. So the more you can test it, you know, there's kind of a term, Occam's razor, which is like the simplest solution is like the best solution, or the most logical, I should say. And I could go on about different points. I think, water is a big one. If you wanted to research it a bit, you know, there's like the Suez Canal, Panama Canal, things having to do with locks and things that, you know, people just never really thought of. There's certain lakes really large. You can, you know, shine a laser and catch it on the other side. So the idea is that if we lived on a ball, then there should be areas you can measure it. And as far as I've gathered, like, you can't really do it. I think the term flat earth is a little like putting people inside a box that I prefer not to. I try to just say, like, I'm a geocentrist. So most people are a heliocentrist, and they usually don't know what that means, which just means like they believe, you know, sun center of the universe. And the more you actually like deep dive into it, it's pretty, it's probably like the deepest rabbit hole you could go in of all the things you could ever go down, all the conspiracy things. It's not even close, in my opinion, in terms of like how it, cognitive dissonance with people. And then also the sort of like sun worshiping occult aspect of it is like all tied in. And I don't know how much we want to keep going. It was just sort of a thing I thought would, you know, get some reaction out of you.
Well, no. Well, you got that. I mean, the reason I'm asking is we had some guys from a Firmamentalist podcast, and they were a joy to have on. And they made me think about some things that I wasn't aware of, because, frankly, I just haven't examined it. There are a number of things that have always stuck out to me long before anybody ever brought up the notion of a flat earth or whatever the earth may or may not be. Like, I'm like, okay, well, if these pyramids are lined up to Orion's belt and they've been here for thousands of years, how are they still lined up? If the earth or the universe and everything in it is expanding, how do we still have the same constellations that were here thousands and thousands of years ago? There's things of it. I don't know that anybody ever pointed out a flat earth necessarily. But what they have proven, and I think proven in spades, is that what we have been officially told are pathological lies from pathological liars. And like you said, like you have it at the bottom of your shirt, NASA lies. Doesn't NASA really stand for never a straight answer, or whatever the case may be? If it's a government source, I tend to believe they're liars until proven otherwise, because I got the goods. But I will honestly say, like you said, the thing with the laser – if we take a laser, we lay it perfectly level, then, you know, there's experiments out there that don't necessarily, to me, prove a flat earth. They just promote the fact that it's just more in a wealth of lies that just don't exist out. I mean, that we've been fed, like being at the bottom of Plato's cave, all of our existence. And then when somebody says, hey, these numbers don't add up, well, I'm a numbers guy. And if the numbers don't add up, then I'm starting to think, well, what else is a lie out there? Because if you're telling me this is what the curvature is, and I'm looking at things that I should not see, doggone it. It kind of spells it all out to me. I mean, it makes perfect sense. So, I mean, that's just everything in a long list of lies. I know this is really going in a way that maybe you didn't expect, Ian, but...
it's all... I mean, we can deep dive on it, you know, sometime. I think the main thing is... where I'm at now is I'm more in a place where I don't really know where we are in the sense, like, I think a lot of people want to have everything figured out in the terms of how the sun works and the moon works and the stars and everything else. And there's some things that, like, we're just kind of kidding ourselves to think that we knew, you know, what happened, you know, billions of years ago or whatever some people believe. And so I think the more you take, like, how I tried to do it was the scientific method should be repeatable. So if there's this theory that people have and you can't repeat it, well, that's not really science. It's sort of like the science religion, and that's become like its whole other school thing. So it's kind of a funny thing to go down just in that sense. I've been punched in the face for talking about this with somebody who was just, you know, really went off the rockers about it. about how stupid I was to even think about that. And so, yeah, if people want to look into it, I would just say, you know, look into water is a big one. There's a lot of things don't quite make sense. There's all these studies. There's a pretty good channel. I haven't looked at it in a while, you know, and anytime I recommend something, you know, there's probably 20% you can disregard. But if somebody has like 80%, some intriguing things just to think about is like The Truth is Stranger in Fiction. It's like a YouTube channel. I hadn't looked at it in a while, but that was sort of one that put out some pretty good things. I think the phrase is what I liked the most about it too, because that really is how the world we live in is, unfortunately, is, you know, some of these things you just can't make up.
It goes all the way around. And this is why I'm willing to entertain this this topic, because no matter what it is, I don't believe anything until it's been officially denied for the most part. Going back to science, or what people call science, this is one of the things I use to red pill a lot of people. And this is something I came up with a long time ago. You know, science supposedly can tell me with absolute certainty the origins of life, how everything began. Okay. You can't possibly test that. You can't do it. Well, you can maybe, if from their perspective, say maybe I see a little bit of evidence. But how is it science will openly admit, they will openly admit that they have no idea how the pyramids were built, which are right there in front of you. You should be able to test it. You should be able, I mean, these are structures that are right there. They will openly admit, we got no idea how these pyramids were built. But you're going to tell me you're absolutely sure of the origins of life. Something that is so far and away more complex than a pyramid sitting right there in front of you, but you're sure about that, but you're unsure about the pyramids. So everything they tell me, I'm going to question, and it comes all the way down to really what I do in the garden, what we do in our food forest. Everything they tell us that you can't do in a food forest, we're doing. And, you know, so-called scientists out there are saying, well, it's not possible or it won't work out. Well, why don't you have that discussion in nature? Because I'm seeing it out there. That's why we're replicating it on my farm. So whether it's what we do in the garden or what we do in, or what we believe concerning geocentrism or whatever position anybody takes, I think it ought to be examined. And I think when you start to examine these things, it opens up your mind concerning others. I mean, how do you see it? Do you see it differently, or is this just one of the areas where you just question it?
So for me, like where I stand now would be, you know, there's maybe my opinion that, you know, I have all sorts of opinions about things, but for the most part, I would say there's really two types of people in the world. There's believers and non-believers in terms of, you know, creator and how we came about, like our purpose in the world, what we're here for, whether there's, you know, life after or not. And so really part of what it comes down to in my perspective around like this whole topic we've been discussing is, if you don't have the Big Bang and the single cell organism that amazingly created all the things and complexities, that's all tied in with like the heliocentric model of the solar system. And if you say, well, the Earth is here, and like in line with what you were saying about the ancient structures and being lined up with, you know, celestial objects, all those cultures knew, as far as they were concerned, that the Earth was the center of the universe. And so all their advanced, any of that, however opinion you want to go on it, that was what they believed. And it's kind of always been known that up until really recent in human history. And so if the Earth is the center, then how do you explain all the other stuff? And so for me, well, I don't know. God made it all. He's the one did it. I don't have to figure it all out. It's not really for me to know everything there is to know about, you know, I mean, a lot of things in life. There's some things even, you know, in Revelation, like, well, don't write down what was uttered by this thunder. You know, why aren't we to know everything? There's some things that for one reason or another, we're not to just absolutely know. But some people, it's like this, you know, people want to have, you know, kind of be their own God, really, in knowing how the world was made. And so for me, a lot of it comes down to people either think they know because of science and everything that they believe in that, or people just have faith God made it and that's how it is. So it's really been kind of interesting over the years, sort of the division it's created with people that you would think, you know, even, yeah, some people just go off the rockers if you go on this subject about them. So sure, some people can chime in and think it's nuts, and that's fine. But I just encourage people, like, you know, not necessarily question everything, but if you never thought about it or don't know anything about it, it's kind of an interesting thing to go down.
I think when you get down to brass tacks, it goes right back to what we always say here, that the mark of a real thinker is the ability to hear any argument without necessarily agreeing or disagreeing with it. You don't even necessarily have to take a position until you examine these things. And like you said, in the grand scheme of things, at the end of the day, going right back to that Psalm 91, I'm going to rest in the secret place of the Most High. That's the most important thing where I'm going to dwell as much as I possibly can these days. Well, Ian, thank you so much for being here. And remember, go check out the Farm Connection. We're going to link all the links down below. Until next time, y'all, stay alert. Stay alive. They don't want an individual, just a carbon copy. You sitting at Manicotti, yeah, I'm talking saucy. All they want to build is a prison world full of pet Tamagotchis. The kamikaze got me out of body like I'm Goku SS3. They want to push me to the center like a cell. They want to split up at the center of the nexus. Me. They want me to battle, but I'm a warrior. I'm a warrior. I will never.